And welcome to the HalfGuarded.com Power Hour. I'm your co-host, Mitch Pomp. Here's my co-host, Dan. Oh, I forgot the name of the movie. Dan Ford.
I thought you were going to do a Dan, Dan Severn reference.
Actually, I was going to do Dan the Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward. Was it Rob Ford?
That was probably.
Yeah, it was a mouthful. That was a fun movie.
Wasn't Brad Pitt in that?
It was Brad Pitt and Casey Affleck.
Who played, Brad Pitt, Jesse James?
Jesse James. He was like older Jesse. Because it's like when he gets killed by his friend, the coward Rob Ford.
What was that guy's actual name? Who cares? He's Rob Ford now.
Rob Ford. It'd be Rob. The former mayor who went on to become this one.
Oh, he's dead now. R.I.P. Thank God. Thank God.
Dan, this week we're going to do a pretty fun little deep historical dive into a subject you know pretty well. That's Nebraska football. Especially 90s kind of era Nebraska football. But before we get started, I want to kind of look at some other sports news from around this past week. And I think the biggest one is Steph Curry. He's back.
Yeah. I mean, we all knew, right? Like, he was, like, the death taxes and state in your ass. In
yeah.
The shovel.
And maybe LeBron James is.
I mean, again, that's another one where he hasn't really gone anywhere, has he? His team is garbage.
Yeah.
And, like, every now and again, you're like, fuck this, and throw a brick through everybody's head.
You know what's wild, though? Like, that team is still, like, definitely unarguably better than, like, the teams he took in, like, 07.
Well, the Kevin league Love is so much better than what it was in 07. So it's like, those teams he dragged into relevancy back then would have never made it past the...
Yeah, because, like, you look at this team, and, like even, like, J.R. Smith now is better than anybody on that team.
How dare you besmirch the name of Boobie Gibson that way.
Boobie Gibson, or... I guess Big Z was okay for what he did.
What was the second best player on that team?
Would have been, like, Big Z or what, Barishaw? Or what, do you have Shaquille O'Neal yet?
But that was, like, busted up.
Yeah, that was, like, before he got traded to the Suns.
Who's the guy who has the same agent? He's still on the team, but he's, like, a ratty-ass nothing dude.
Kendrick Perkins?
No, he's like a power forward center. Tristan Thompson. Tristan Thompson was probably the second best team on that
team. No, Tristan Thompson didn't even show up until, like, 2010. This is pre, really? Yeah.
Oh, God. That's even, yeah, okay. Yeah, but it was probably Boozin, right?
Yeah.
Remember Larry Hughes' corpse was on that team?
Larry Hughes, I think, like, Eric Snow.
They were on the Philadelphia 76ers
team. It was like those, I guess, took the Iverson 76ers team and, like, redid it with Cleveland. And we're just like, oh, this will work.
Yeah, if I'm trying to build a team, I'm definitely going to try to end 2076ers.
That's definitely not a model that will destroy a player's body. Probably ruin his career like he did for Allen Iverson.
And his will to live, never mind his body.
Yeah, I'm talking about practice. But Allen any other...
Allen Iverson's body is, right? Like, yeah, chronologically, you know, 40. But, like, physically, he's in the shape of, like, a 65-year-old.
Dan, I got some other exciting sports news before we get into our main topic here. Jim Harbaugh is taking the University of Michigan to South Africa in 2019.
That's weird.
We know you take someone a trip every year.
Yeah, but, like, I would... See, my only real exposure to South Africa was, like, when I was a kid, there was, like, a bunch of, like, weirdo Afrikaners who, like, you know, who'd moved to America after something changed in South Africa. I'm not quite sure what. And then they were involved with my church. And in retrospect, like, as a kid, it's like, oh, yeah, that kid's nice. His parents seem all right. And then, like, in retrospect, it's like, oh, this is kind of sinister.
Yeah.
That we're involved with Bull.
Well, since previously they had gone to Spain and France. So imagine.
Fucking to Italy. Didn't they go to Italy?
Italy, too. So I guess maybe he's just taking them through a tour of colonization. So each team will get to see, you know, the ones at the beginning saw the, you know, where things started, and then they'll see how things. Maybe that's sure. What. Woke Harbaugh.
Harbaugh is woke. He supported Colin Kaepernick.
There you go.
Oh. Urban Meyer and his wife, not woke at all.
Mm.
They were like, oh, I'm so glad we coached Tebow instead of Colin Kaepernick.
Mm. Well, Urban Meyer, did he coach Colin Kaepernick? Is that right? No, who coached Colin Kaepernick?
Kaepernick went to Nevada.
Who's the coach there?
The same age as
him. Okay, who's the coach at Nevada? Who's in Nevada?
Chris Ault, the man who invented the...
Okay. Where is he now?
He is retired.
There you go.
He was old when he was coaching Kaepernick. Like he like he was a coach in like the 90s when Nevada first started playing high level football. And then he retired. Nevada fell apart and he came out of retirement. He came out of retirement. Because when he was at Nevada the first time, he was an I form. He was like a Nebraska offense guy. They ran like the I formation triple option. And when he came back, he's like, well, this is a little outdated. What can I do?
So he kind of did something similar to what our main guy here today, Randy Walker, did in Northwestern.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, there's a little bit of like, hey, coming up with a different idea of how to skin a cat instead of let's do what everybody else does.
How about that for a segue? So our game this week is the 2000 Alamo Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, I understand if anybody watched this game and they're like, why did you watch it? It was like 66-17. But there's a couple of reasons why. There's few teams who could beat the shit out of you, like how Nebraska people. Because it wasn't just, oh, these guys are dicks when they're up by, like, it's like how Miami did back in. Like, they're literally just, you're by the third, fourth quarter, your body is, and they're just running, like, straight ISO. And you can't stop it anymore. Your lungs aren't working because you've been hit so many times.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they had a very physical style of playing. Which is reminiscent of what Wisconsin. Obviously, they're often Wisconsin. Wisconsin does. They came from like the same background. It's just Tom Osborne decided to add option instead of passing. They ended up with their offense, and Wisconsin ended up with theirs. But I wanted to talk about a little bit of where this offense came from. Where both of these offenses and how and why, you know, why you don't see this Nebraska offense anymore. Because I'm still not that teams shouldn't be running something. It looks like somebody shouldn't be running something or what. Osborne and what this Nebraska team ran. I mean, they mentioned it on the thing. They led the league in rushing and they had like the second overall offense. And this was supposedly when Nebraska's offense was so outdated, Pete.
Let's take a look at this Nebraska though. You want to look at that first? Or you want to look at the history of Nebraska?
We'll look at this Nebraska team. This was a disappointing season for Nebraska.
Tennessee, by the way.
They came into the season preseason number one. And they went 10-2, and yeah, you might go, oh my God, you're bitching about 10-2. And there's a lot of Nebraska today who would probably be like, if you told them they used to be disappointed by 10-2, would like throw up all over themselves knowing, you know, what it's been like since they fired Frank. But when you dig down, there was reason to be a little disappointed because the Big 12 this year was garbage. It was absolute trash. They only played two ranked teams all season.
Yeah.
And they lost to both of them.
Yeah, one of those great teams.
Until the bowl, they beat Northwestern. But during the regular season, they played two ranked teams and lost to both of them.
Yeah,
one of them was national champion that year, Oklahoma, which, you know, that's Bob Stoops' only national championship, and it's a little bit of, I mean, I'm not saying we should take it away from him, but they had a pretty easy road. If that Oklahoma team had been playing in the Big 12 of, like, 2004, they absolutely would not have made it out of the Big 12 with no loss. Like, they went undefeated that season because the Big 12 that year wasn't very good. So they lost to Oklahoma. They lost to Kansas State. It was not a great loss because that Kansas State team did finish ranked. They did have a good season, but they didn't play anybody at all. And their only real quality win was Nebraska. Their big win was beating Notre Dame, who was comically overrated that year. Should not have finished ranked, but that's their only win over a ranked team. So there you go.
Yep.
So there's reasons why Nebraska were grumbling. They weren't being totally outraged to be upset with being 10-2.
Yeah, because this looks like a year where we kind of talked about this in the pre-show, how like really good coaches take advantage. Like, even though they don't have the talent or everything really around them, they take advantage of bad or good situations, if you will.
And there's a thing that happens every year, and I've been guilty of it too, where you go into the year and you look at, like, who's a good team that has an easy schedule, and you pencil them in, and you're like, oh, well, you know, they might not be the five best teams in the country. They might be, like, the eighth best team. But, God, the schedule is so – it doesn't really matter how easy your schedule is. If you're not really that kind of – you're probably going to blow it.
No, yeah, it's 100% fair. So who was leading? Who was the big rushing, the 1-2 punch, the rushing attack for this Nebraska?
Well, obviously, anytime you talk about that era of Nebraska, you're going to talk about Eric. Was a truly electrifying player. He passed the ball for 1,100 yards that year. That was, by the way, a bad year for Nebraska, even by their, as far as their passing. Like, that Nebraska had been doing around 1,500, 1,600 yards. I think Scott Frost even got close to throwing 2,000, you know, one of his. They were not, obviously, they weren't much of a passing-oriented team. They were an option team, but they typically could hit some big play action passes.
Yeah, you got a waggle in there, I would assume.
They used to run a lot of like fake option play action.
Yeah.
Where like the quarterback would take the hike, he would sprint out to his right, but then he would just pull up and throw a pass over the top.
Dan, do you remember Eric Crouch graced the cover of a video game?
Sure, he was like NCAA 2001, wasn't he?
2K.
2K.
2K. Ah. Dreamcast exclusive. So a big star there. So who was the running back behind? Who was kind of helping Eric Crouch all this work?
You know, they really went with their three top rushers. Yeah. Eric Crouch had their second most carries with 100. You know, he had 170 carries, and he almost had 1,000. It's just short. He led the league. He led the team in touchdowns by far. He had 20 touchdowns running the ball. But their top two runners were Dan Alexander, Carell Buckhalter. Carell Buckhalter did have an NFL.
He's Dan probably the Alexander, one guy in this game.
I never remember Dan Alexander. He wasn't like they kind of like Bill Curry made a comment during the game. Like Dan Alexander was worried that he wasn't quite fast enough, and Bill Curry made a comment, well, "You're plenty fast." So, and say, actually, no, he was right. He wasn't fast enough to make it to the NFL.
Well, Buckhalter was the only guy who went on to modest success, like, from this game in the NFL.
Yeah,
so, maybe some offensive linemen.
I mean, at this point in Nebraska's history, the way they used to recruit was get NFL tailbacks, like guys who were going to play in the NFL as halfback, and then NFL offensive linemen. And then everybody else, we don't really, we'll take, like, if you played wide receiver for Nebraska, you were probably, or you were like a converted quarterback, like Bobby Newton, who like they recruited you to play quarterback and you just didn't, you just got replaced for whatever reason. So they moved you to wide receiver so you could be on the field. Like that was the way Nebraska kind of at that point. And Nebraska really used to spend a lot of their time trying to recruit high level defensive. Like basically what they were looking for was like awesome offensive linemen, awesome running backs, and then defensive players out the wazoo.
Kind of, you know, you compared it to Wisconsin earlier. Kind of like how Wisconsin is now, though, especially like at linemen. Look how many Wisconsin linemen, or even Iowa.
Iowa puts a ton of offensive linemen in, though.
Yeah, and it's kind of like that Nebraska, kind of called like the corn boy kind of strategy there.
I mean, Nebraska was so dominant in that area for so long that, of course, they had a tremendous impact on the schools around them.
Yeah.
And then you look, like, everybody around there thought about Nebraska to an extent or another. Like, you could not avoid them. You know, they were such a singular dominant so many
years. All right. So, Dan, on the other side, we've got Northwestern. 8-4 record, but you could argue maybe a better season, a better resume at least, into this.
They had some impressive skins up on the wall. Like, they beat – some of this is just the Big Ten was a hell of a lot better conference.
Yeah.
Like, this was the point where the Big Ten was the best conference in college football.
Yeah.
By a pretty
– Look at Wisconsin. Alvarez was there?
Yeah, this was the peak of Barry Alvarez probably.
Yeah.
This is when this was right around the time he got offered the Miami job before the players ended up hiring Larry Coker instead.
Yeah. So, yeah, big win over Wisconsin. You beat Nick Saban.
A cover behind win, they won 47-4.
Yeah, you blew out Nick Saban's Michigan State team.
Basically, Nick Saban went running like a scalded dog. He wanted no part of staying in. And then the
or the AFC.
Well, yeah.
Probably Nick Saban's the guy who knows when he's probably not gonna win in that situation.
He's pretty good at making that calculated decision. You know,
yeah,
like,
I think Nick Saban's good at knowing what's best for him.
Yeah.
Pretty. Yeah. And you beat Michigan, the game that you put in your notes that maybe we should have watched, and a game dubbed the most important game in the history.
Yeah, that's a moniker that Chris Brown of Smart Football gave it. He's always called that the most important game spread. That was the day where Northwestern, and it's something we'll touch on when we start talking about the game. Northwestern had no talent whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like, maybe their best player was their run, who was okay. Probably good to be a backup for a good team. You know, he would have been good enough to be a Nebraska backup, but that's it.
Yeah.
Like he was like, that's it. Their quarterback was not particularly what I would call fast, but you know, he was gutsy, I guess would be the best way to put it.
Well, Dan, you know, you point that out and you look at their key losses, most of them blowouts. TCU, you run into LaDainian Thomas. They lose to Purdue. Another guy who actually played with LaDainian Thomas named Drew Brees.
Yeah. Decent. Yeah, that Purdue team was pretty good. They went to the Rose Bowl.
And Iowa. It's Iowa.
Yeah. Kirk Ferentz will always find a way to gum you, even when it's not even like He will just find a way to make your life a living hell.
Just a soul-sucking beast of a man. Just some sort of, like, he's like a horror movie. You stumble into Iowa.
Then you don't come out alive.
You don't come out, and it's not like you die quickly. Like, you die over a month of him sucking.
He turns you into a walrus, and then, you know, you slowly die of exposure.
Yeah, or, like, he just slowly puts, like, a gram of sodium in you every day until you get, like, salt poisoning and die. I don't know if that's a thing, but that's what he does.
I think human beings can handle more than 1 gram of salt. We do live in the South.
None can come out. That's part of the... I don't know how it works. It's Kirk. He can do anything. He can find ways to kill a man that we can't even... So mundane.
He's a terrifying man.
He will cut your legs off with the type of man. But yeah, this Northwestern team, not a ton of talent, but what makes this offense a special name? What are they kind of doing versus kind of what Nebraska...
So they were... I mean, this was – Rich Rodriguez is the guy who invented the spread offense, and he invented it as a D2 coach at Glenville State, small college in West Virginia. And he would hold coaching clinics, and that's kind of how he got his name out there, and he ended up getting the offensive coordinator job at Tulane, coaching for Tommy Bowden, who then brought him to Clemson. And then from Clemson, he got the head coaching job at West Virginia. But part of how he got his name out was running all these clinics showing this newfangled offense.
Like, he almost did if I can interrupt, almost like a, what you call like an old school road show, where like he had this amazing product, he went town to town and sold it, the spread elixir. So this is the cure for your no-talented football program.
Well, I've got a system.
But no, I'm not saying it was shame, but that's kind of what he did. He had these clinics to kind of spread the word, the gospel.
In some ways, in a lot of ways, it's just coaches do these.
Yeah.
Like coaching clinics are...
You know, add some drama.
Sure. Yes, Rich Rodriguez as a traveling medicine show man.
Yeah, he went. He hitched his wagon, went town to town, spreading the word of the spread. Said, this offense right here, you got no talent? You got to have a 3.8 GPA to get in? I got your cure. Here's 8 wins right here, baby.
Yeah, and and some of the earliest people who came to his coaching were Randy Walker and Kevin Wilson.
Yeah, these men went up to the booth and they bought the elixir and they said, wow, got a boner again.
So when you look at what Northwestern was doing, it was a lot of what we watched last with Rich Rodriguez, except it's what Rich Rodriguez was doing in like 96, 97. Because if we may get some time to go watch, Tulane had their undefeated season in, I believe, 1997, 98, somewhere like there. Tulane went undefeated, and because they had such a bad strength of schedule, they didn't get to go to a good bowl game.
Was that our boy Sean King?
That is Sean King, his senior year at Tulane. And their offense was not what we saw last with Pat White, because he didn't have as much of the called quarterback run stuff, because Sean King wasn't that kind. He didn't have that kind of runner at Glenville State. And, that stuff he started putting in when he was at Clemson and he got Woody, who was this amazing running quarterback. And then that's when he started changing his offense to look a little bit more like that. Northwestern, they're basing a lot of what used to do at Tulane. And so there is a lot more passing. And their quarterback doesn't have to necessarily be. And, this is the early days of the spread. Nobody's seen a zone read before. Just running that is like, okay, I just got 15 yards, regardless of how good an athlete my quarterback is.
We talked about this last week. I think it's like a point I almost want to hit on in every episode, especially when we talk about the option. If you can hit that first hole uncovered or catch that guy off guard, it's a big play every time in football. Doesn't matter what level, what you're doing. If you hit that, if you hit like a weird triple option up the A gap and, you give it to your fullback, he's rushing right in there. No one catches him. That's going to be 15, 20, maybe even 100 yards sometimes.
Absolutely.
And we see some of this in this game.
Well, that's the thing Tom Osborne also says, that if you run a perfectly blocked off tackle, you're going to get about 7 yards. If everybody does exactly what they're supposed to, exactly how you coach them, you'll get about 7 yards. If you call a triple option and everybody blocks exactly how they're supposed to, and everybody reads exactly how they're supposed to, you're going to score a touchdown.
Yeah. Or even it's something as simple as sometimes like an ISO. If it's just ran perfectly. That's like the weirdest thing about football sometimes, Dan. I think like sometimes when you go straight up the middle, like really is the easiest way to score a touchdown if there's no one in front of you. Sometimes football's as simple, we complicate things.
Especially when, this is the thing I love about what Nebraska used to be, is that you get teams going side to side defending the option, and then you just hit them with this brutal ISO fullback lead play. And it's like, okay, you've stretched the defense so much horizontally to defend the triple option, they're not really prepared for you to then put every single body is blocking inside, you know, the A gap, and they just can't handle it.
Or you get guys not thinking about it, and especially in college, especially back then when players weren't as smart. I think
true. You didn't have the same. Yeah. You didn't have the same coaching. You know.
Well, you have kids that grew up playing Madden. Like, I think we forget, like, that's how kids know how to read defenses now, because they grew up playing Madden in NCAA. You know, like, it sounds stupid, but I think when you hear kids talk, and they're like, yeah, I knew what a cover two was when I was eight. And, like, I bet you Deion Sanders didn't, you know? Because kind of the differences now between then. That's something I tend to notice at work. But, like, guys today just seem to be a little bit smarter in how they play. Maybe, like, to the detriment of the game, and maybe not can't make kind of the same spectacular things, but maybe a little bit smarter and calculated.
There's probably something that, I mean, that's definitely. I definitely think we have a more football literate population. You can just listen to the way games are announced like 20 years ago versus how they're announced today. And there's like an expectation of the announcer having to explain certain things today that they didn't necessarily have to.
No, because
in this game, especially.
Like if you plopped Romo, you know, 20 years ago, he would have been burned at the stake for being a witch with all, But like now, it's the perfect, you know, combo, you know, kind of the best of both worlds. Let's jump into this game then, the 2000 Alamo Bowl.
Oh, I do want to talk about something about Nebraska's offense.
Okay, before we jump into this.
Nebraska's offense, the basic premise, and it's hard to understand that by the time you get into this game because it's so old school. Oh my God, they're so old school. But the philosophy behind what Nebraska, when Tom Osborne created this offense, was how can we run the triple option while still being a pro formation? Because when you look at how team the option, first they ran it out of the, you know, you go back to the 50, you know, early triple option offenses. They're running it out of the, and then, you know, Emory Bellard in Texas invents what he called the Y formation, but we end up calling the wishbone, is, you know, these are all three running back, full house backfield formation. So you really can't, you really don't have much of a passing threat out of them because you only have, you know, you're either two tight ends or you're one receiver, one tight end, and three guys in the backfield. So you don't have a lot of bodies, or you can't throw it. You're having a decision where we're either going to have muscle on the line or we're going to have a flanker out there to throw to. You can't do both.
And it's kind of before the day of, like, where you could come out maybe in a wishbone and then you motion out of it.
Right. I mean,
not like some wacky Peyton Manning shit wasn't around. That was some like shit back then.
Yeah. And when you look at, there had been attempts to do that, and Bill Yeoman did do that. He was a longtime head coach. He ran a split back formation pro set, and they ran the triple option out of that. But they, with those kind of offense, straight ahead run that you could get. Tom Osborne, a pro style coach. It's the thing people don't realize about Osborne. The 60s and the 70s, you know, he was the offensive coordinator at Nebraska before he became head coach. He was a pro style guy. They were basically running the same offense as USC. You know, they put a bunch of quarterbacks in the NFL. They put wide receivers in the NFL. Like, Irving Fryer went to, you know, went to Nebraska. Johnny Rogers won a Heisman Trophy playing wide receiver in Nebraska. They put, you know, Vincent Ferragamo played in a Super Bowl as a quarterback from Nebraska. You know, they were an NFL pro-style team. He got his ass beat so many times by the wishbone that he's like, well, I'm going to run the option. But instead of doing it the same way everybody else was, he adapted what he was already doing. They took all of their pro-style run. They ran all the same running plays that everybody was running in the NFL, plus the triple option. So instead of them having all these gimmicky, like, oh, we're in the wishbone and we motion the guy and then we motion him back across and we hand it off to him, or we run like this fullback trap, halfback traps, and all this stuff that in the NFL you're not really running a ton of that. If you do, it's like a gimmick, you know, to throw people off.
Yeah.
He was running everything the NFL ran plus. And, you know, he's passing the NFL pass anymore, but, you know, they were scoring a lot of points winning the game. And so when you
look at it's not his job to make it, you know, also too. Like,
yeah.
It's not your job to make NFL players. It's your job to win football.
And when you look back on, you know, there's a thing about Nebraska, they put an NFL running backs, they put a ton of running backs in the NFL, and they put a ton of linemen in the NFL. Even though their linemen weren't doing a lot of pass ball, because their linemen could do everything as far as run. Like, no matter what you were running in the NFL, as far as, like, what were you a zone block team, or were you a power team, or did you like to run a lot of, you know, lead draw, or did you want to run a, do you want to still run some traps and stuff? If you drafted a Nebraska line, he's done them all. He's done all that. He's practiced all of it. He's good at all of it. No matter what kind of run game you wanted to have for your NFL team, you draft a Nebraska lineman, he's seen it, he's done. And so I think there's, when we talk about Nebraska as a triple option team, I think we get a little overly reductive. They weren't a triple option. This wasn't Paul John, where they're running some toss sweep and some misdirection runs and some fullback traps, and then everything else is triple option. You know, Paul Johnson, Nebraska was incredibly complicated in what they did offensively. It was just they didn't spend much time worrying about throwing them. But they had about 20 different ways to run the ball. They were extremely complicated in how they ran. And I just wanted to mention that before we start talking about it. I don't like when people talk about Nebraska as just some bones. It's simple.
No, I think we'll kind of get in probably in another episode on the fall of Nebraska. But hint, hint, it had less to do with their offense and more to do with the kind of changing scholarship design and all that stuff, right?
And this is a team that gave up 41 CU. That had something to do with it.
And I think probably something to do with the changing demographics.
Sure.
Let's jump to this. See if I'm reading this right. The Slovenia Alamo Bowl.
Sure, Slovenia. They make wonderful television. Cheap people who buy TVs from Walmart.
And light bulbs. Do you know who sponsored this previously, Dan? I looked this up.
Who?
Builder Square.
What is that?
It was Kmart's answer to the Home Depot of the 90s. It would go out of business by 2000, would come back in 2006 as online retail, and went out of business as an online retail.
Well, when I think of good business ideas, I always think 90s Kmart.
Yes. Well, it's Kmart's answer to Home Depot, and I think I would just assume they did be my
Well, sister. Also, who's going to go to Kmart? I've got a Home Depot, and I've got Lowe's. Why?
Well, it wasn't Kmart, it was the builders.
But if I'm a builder, Square. I've got Lowe's and I've got, and that's all they do. Why am I going to go to a people who don't really know what they're doing, who are starting this thing on like a lark?
Yeah.
Who don't even know how to run like the thing they've been doing for a long time.
I didn't do enough research into Builder Square to figure out. I know they were San Antonio based, or the Alamo. Also, do you know what the number one movie was? December 30th, 2000.
Was it Lord of the Rings?
No. Much better movie. Castaway.
I hate
it. Also, just come out to the box office, a little movie, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? So some classics in the box office. Number one song?
Foggy Bottom Boys? Soggy Bottom Boys?
Yeah. George Clooney, John Goodman, others, A Little Person, lots of stuff. The number one song, though, Dan, was Independent Women Part 1.
What was Part 2?
I have no idea.
Did they ever do a Part 2?
They may have.
We're still waiting.
This was the song from, I think, Charlie's Angels.
Charlie's Angels. The classic film.
Do you remember what the villain wanted to do?
It was basically like Facebook, wasn't it?
Like, wanted to make where your phone could track everywhere you've been.
Oh, the horror.
Oh, that's wild. Also, some notes on the show and the programming. First off, how about this damn intro, Dan? This was a 90s-ass intro, right? The voiceover. This felt like a WWF thing. Voiceover and all that bullshit.
Yeah.
Eric
Crouch's hair was especially 90s as hell. That, like, center part 90s shit.
This is, like, the end of the 90s with that fake corporate anti-authoritarianism kind of vibe to it, especially with the intro. And how about a broadcast crew, Dan? Bill Effin Curry, Mike freaking Golick, on the sidelines, Michelle fucking Topoya. What a crew. All Hall of Famers.
Yeah, Mike Golick is constantly used by everything.
Oh, that was... Mike Golick was awful. Is that fair to say? Just not a very good...
I listened to Mike Golick call a lot of bulls, because every year ESPN would give him, like, one bowl game assignment. I've never heard him say anything coherent.
No, it wasn't that great on the spot. But
Bill Curry straddles the line between, like, idiot and folksy charm. Golick, like, lunges over that line.
And then Tafoya, just... Why is she on this? She should have probably been in the booth calling the game. What is she doing now? She's still the sideline, though, doesn't
she? Well, she's an NFL sideline.
That's right. Who is it? Did she never call games? No, that's Susie Culver, right? Calls games now?
You're thinking of Susie Culver. Who's now
same thing. Yeah, same thing. They're both
way too good for
women.
This role.
Yes. Golick.
And at some point, they try to get her to come on television. No, I'm going to get fired if I...
And, like, Golick probably should have...
That would have probably been a good place for... Have you ever seen games from the 70s and the 80s where they still have male sideline reporters?
Yeah, well, remember, like, Tony Siragusa on Fox forever. Maybe still
he was the first. He was the first return of the male sideline reporter.
Yeah, we need more dudes on the sideline, though.
Kevin,
especially, like, fat
linemen. His name? The guy who... Alex Riley. His dad was a sideline reporter for the NFL.
Yeah.
and he was terrible. Like, as bad at talking in pro wrestling as Alex Riley, his dad was even worse. Like, his dad...
Has there ever been a good sideline reporter? Up until, like, 2000, when, like, they let... When, like, smart women had to do it because of sexism.
I think Jim Lampley wasn't bad at it. I mean, he's made fun of himself at it. He said, well, anybody could have done it.
Was Lampley... Oh, I'm thinking it was Jim Gray,
who
was,
like, Jim Gray's never been good at anything he's ever...
Yeah. He was the one, though, that would, like... interview someone's family and be so, what was it like when your husband raped you? Like, Jim, this is not the moment for you to break a goddamn story.
Jim Lampley has like two ways of asking a question. Jim Gray. Jim Gray is either going to ask you the biggest softball in the history of the world, like, well, what is it like to be as talented and as dedicated to your craft? Is like one of those like Ahmad Rashad, Michael Jordan questions. or alternatives like, hey, why did you evict your mom from her house and sell it, you know?
What was going through your head as your wife?
This is a Denny's.
Jim Lampley's the guy from HBO, though.
Jim Lampley, yeah, he does.
But Golic definitely should have. Because, like, the natural thing with Golic, you put him on the sideline, you have him eat food. Like, who's the guy who did the food gimmick on ESPN? You just do that 10 years before.
That is the former Blackley. Former quarterback for Penn State, was drafted in the famous 83 quarterback class. Yeah. And was the worst. I think he played, like, three seasons before Kansas State realized they had six quarterbacks they could have picked, and they picked the dud. Overall, too. Like, they didn't draft him late. They could have had, like, four different Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and instead they picked Todd Blackley.
Yeah, so I feel like though, if you go back in time, I'm moving Gold to the sideline. He's talking about.
And he just has like a bucket of KFC in it, in his like.
Yeah, or whatever you eat. I'm sure there's delicious food in San Antonio. You show him eating.
I don't know. It's probably too spicy for him. Mike Golic seems like the kind of guy who would complain about tacos being too spicy.
So Dan, let's jump in. We're not gonna go drive by drive, but what kind of happened early on? Northwestern.
So early on in this game, there was a pattern where, like, every time Northwestern would try to throw the ball, it wasn't very effective. And then you look at their wide receivers and you go, well, okay, that's why. Look, I'm not gonna get into race science here, but when you look up at a college football team and all their wide receivers are like 5'9" and white, they're probably going to have a hard time getting separation on their opponents.
Yeah.
But every time Northwestern went to the ground, they were just huge runs. And they were busting on things you wouldn't have thought would have fooled Nebraska. Like, how many times did you see them run speed option for, like, 20 yards?
Yeah.
And it's like, that should have been something Nebraska – like, Nebraska ran a lot of – that should have been something they were prepared for. But whatever it was, being in the shotgun, being at that pace, they had a struggle defending the shotgun run game. I think part of it is that they were way too fixated on the running back, and the quarterback would just gallop past them for 25. And it was just, you know, they came into that game going, the running back's not going to beat us. And then they just let the quarterback just run free like a wild buffalo in 1800.
Yeah. I think we noted this too on your notes here, Dan. One of the first drives you talk about how good Eric Crouch was at making that pitch at the last possible, like an action movie to build drama.
Yeah, the thing about Nebraska, they tended to be very disciplined with their quarterbacks. Like, when Tom Osborne was there, it was like, don't be doing that late pitch shit, because that's a great way to get a fumble. Like, this is the point where you make your read, and if you see it, you pitch it. If you don't, you keep it. That's it. There's no, like, there's none of this, like, hey, 5 yards down the field, then you pitch it. With Eric Crouch and obviously Osborne, they let him be a little bit more adventurous with his pitches. And he had he would work his way down the field and, like, 3 yards upfield, make a cut out and pitch that ball off. And that added an element of explosiveness to what Nebraska did that wasn't necessarily there when they had Scott Frost, for sure. Because Scott Frost wasn't a bad athlete. Imagination. Scott Frost wasn't the athlete Eric Crouch was. He was a lot more, I guess you. Some of this is not as, like, what Eric Crouch was doing here could have very easily backfired in, you know, 6 points going the other way.
When he
laterals the ball onto the ground.
If Eric Crouch comes around today, Dan, do you think he's playing quarterback?
Yeah, he would have been a shotgun zone read, you know.
Where do you see him at?
Rich Rod playing for Rich Rod at Arizona.
Ugh, that sounds awful. You'll think like an A&M under Sumlin.
No, he couldn't throw enough for Texas A&M really didn't run a lot of options.
Because I'm thinking, you know, like the kid at West Virginia right now, used to play quarterback. He was like one of the best receivers in football last year. Just wonder maybe if Al Crouch isn't playing wide receiver.
I don't think somewhere. He was tall enough. He was like 5'11".
Was he? Oh, okay.
Well, the NFL tried to move him to safety.
Yeah.
Well, and he quit because he was like, I'm not a safety, I'm a quarterback. I'm going to prove. Doug Flutie fucked up a lot of guys who maybe could have had an NFL career switching positions. Because, like, the Doug Flutie thing happened in, like, 1998, you know, and then all these, like, dudes who were, like, option quarterbacks in college who absolutely had no chance at the NFL. Thought, well, Doug Flutie made it by going to Canada. I'll go to Canada. And then they went to Canada and were shitty.
Yeah, and it's just like, no, Doug Flutie, A, played for one of the, was it stuff, the end of Marv Levy, I think, there?
Yeah.
In Buffalo?
No, he played for Wade Phillips, who took that's over.
Right. Oh, okay, so excellent coach, especially, like, back then. And, like, also had to have one of the greatest plays in the history of NFL football to make it past the wild card there.
Also, Doug Flutie was a really awesome quarterback in college, just really short. The NFL was like, oh, he's too short.
And
like,
he
wasn't, like, a triple option back.
Yeah. But anyway, Dan, this game kind of gets going. It feels kind of back and forth. Well, we get our first touchdown on about the fourth drive here?
Yeah. You know, part of what's going on, there's a bit of like a discipline issue. I think Northwestern was a little intimidated in this game. They made some plays where you look at it and you go, okay, that penalty, like you get a penalty here when you're on like the 9 yard line, then you get sacked, and then suddenly you go from being first and 10 from like from the opponent's 9 yard line to third and goal from the 30, you know, and it's just like, that kept happening Northwestern early, and I think that is what caused Northwestern to end up getting behind the eight ball and why this game spiraled, because they blew some early opportunities with discipline problems. You just couldn't do that against
team like Northwestern, even though they had the better resume this year, something that I would assume previous games played a little bit more. I don't have the stats in front of me, but
I think some of it is that they just didn't play teams this offensively. Like, Nebraska, I mean, the book was out on Nebraska, obviously. If you got them down early, they would struggle because they couldn't really throw. I mean, we saw that whenever Eric Crouch tried to throw.
Yeah.
There was one drive where Nebraska came out throwing every play. It was like, I don't know what you were thinking, but I'm thinking it. The announcers are saying it. Like, what are you doing? Why are you throwing it on first down ever with Eric Crouch?
You know where Eric Crouch could have worked, Dan?
Give it to me.
Ohio State.
I mean, yeah, he's not quite big enough for Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer likes big, lumbering,
big boys,
230-pound quarterbacks.
Mm. I'm trying to find somewhere where you would have been, maybe with the better resume.
There's one thing they mentioned in this game is that he always looked really good throwing the ball, and then the game would start, his feet would just start. He couldn't stand his feet.
You think some of that was Nebraska probably just didn't have the best passing QB coaches?
And then there's a lot of these guys today.
The best, but just not putting a ton of focus on them.
Right, and there's a lot of these guys today, like, when they're in, like, school, their parents have, like, quarterback goo.
Yeah.
And they're, like, learning. Like, dudes in high school today,
like are getting coached up by, like,
fundamentals than half the college
did. Did you go to the Doug Johnson coaching camp or the Danny Warfel passing camp? I'm going to show you a lot more. Who's a bad quarterback that probably is a scamming high school kids right now? Todd Blackridge.
I mean, the obvious one is who's the guy who won the Super Bowl with Baltimore?
Oh, Trent Dilfer?
Trent Dilfer's like real big on that quarterback.
Oh, yes. He didn't do anything.
Like, you Elvis were bad Grabak at football.
You were benched for Elvis Grabak.
Was it Elvis Grabak or was it Kyle Bowler? Was Kyle Bowler later?
Bowler would have been later. I think that was the guy drafted by. I was like Billick's last chance.
Yeah, Billick did have a great comment about Josh Allen where he said, the biggest mistake of my coaching career was looking at Kyle Bowler and thinking I could fix his inability to throw an accurate pass. That was the biggest mistake of my coaching. So it's like, he didn't just say Josh Allen's going to be terrible, but I've been here.
Yeah. So, Dan, really, you know, kind of going looking back at our notes, by about the seventh drive of the game, this one's pretty much out of hand. And you kind of go back to, do you think it was, obviously a lot of it was Nebraska, just had more. But how much of it do you think was just Northwestern, you know, kind of went up against a big dog in a different situation and just kind of choked or looked the other way?
I think some of this is just
flinched.
There was a huge talent mismatch, and Wisconsin had very good teams, but they weren't necessarily super talented. If that makes sense. Michigan State had extremely well coached defensive teams, but they weren't really talented. And Michigan just could not defend this offense. Lloyd Carr still couldn't defend this offense like 8 years after this when he got beat by Appalachian State. Like, if you put a spread team against Lloyd Carr, I mean, he was going to try to defend it with four down linemen and three linebackers who all weighed 260 pounds. Like, it did not compute to him that, hey, maybe we should get more speed on the field.
Yeah. No, we just go bigger.
Yeah, let's get a 280-pound linebacker.
Yeah, because it's kind of that mentality of, oh, you're trying to finesse, well, physically. And it's like, well, no, like, sometimes that kind of works in situations. Most of the time, you got to go finesse versus finesse, you know?
Yeah, at some point, you probably need to get, like, somebody who can defend a slot receiver on the field.
That tends to be an issue. But what kind of... wrapping up this game, because like I said, we did take quite the blowout. What happens to Northwestern?
There's a point where Nebraska just starts. I mean, they hit him with a couple of big option plays. There's a long Eric Crouch option run out of the single back formation where he just runs a speed option down the line.
Just a thing of beauty.
Nobody defends him, and they're typically thrown off, which was one of my favorite plays Nebraska used to run, because on paper that really shouldn't be that devastating a play, but they almost always ran out of a balanced, like when they would line up in a one back set, they almost always ran out of a balance. Occasionally we saw them come into this game with like a running back in the slot who would like motion over, and then they would run that sweep, fake sweep handoff play that you see a lot today. Which I didn't remember them running that as much. So that was like, oh man, they were running that back then. That's like every team who runs under center runs that play like 10 times a game.
Yeah.
But their favorite thing was to line up with two tight end receivers, balanced set, and then you don't know which direction the play is going to go. You know, that was their big thing, is that, hey, we might run the option to the left, we might run the option to the right, or we might just run an outside zone. Who knows? Obviously, Northwestern didn't, because Eric Crouch went for like 85 yards. So that felt like the point where Northwestern got like the old knife, and it was like they were hanging on. Their defense was trying to keep them in the game, for the offense to get their shit together, and stop screwing up the end of these drives that were like Northwestern would go 80 yards and then fuck up on the. That was the play where Northwestern, like Nebraska, started to break Northwestern's spirit defensively.
Yeah.
And no team ever broke your spirit quite like when Nebraska was Nebraska. They made you just want to give up, because it's just they hit you so hard for four quarters, and they ran so much shit at you, and they did all of this crap, would bust these big long runs, and you, God damn it, they're not even having to throw.
And that was their fourth string run.
They just pitched it off to the fourth string. They just ran a fullback trap with their third string fullback, and he just busted up the middle for 16 yards.
So game ends. Nebraska's looking. I think at the beginning of the game, this game is going to salvage Nebraska's year. Probably didn't salvage it. Missed opportunity.
The grumbling did not end.
So you fast forward. So what happens to Northwestern though?
This was a miracle year for Northwestern, and they fell back down to earth the next year at 7. But, there was definitely this feeling at Northwestern that they'd figured something out, that they'd figured out an identity that they stuck with, even though, they went 4-7 and then 3-9. But the fact that they went 8-4, they felt comfortable with this identity, and they more or less, some Pat Fitzgerald teams have gotten a little bit more, tight end heavy and more like, hey, we're going to run the ball 40 times and slow it down a little bit. But they've more or less been a spread team ever since, because of this was the first time they'd had any success.
Yeah.
And so it was like this became their identity, for good or bad. And they stuck with it ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as Nebraska went, obviously the next year they played in the national championship. And Miami beat them like they'd stolen something
from them. I always think, when I think of that game, I think of like, just probably around the same time the Perfect Storm came out. I would assume too, but it was like a picture of a little boat, said Nebraska, had the colors and everything, and then just a giant tidal wave that said Miami coming out. That's kind of what I think of when I think of that game.
And it's so Mother Nature to me killing that boat. Nebraska got so much shit for the crap beat out of them by Miami. Literally, that Miami would have done that too in front of them. That was maybe the greatest college football team
I Yeah, like everyone talks about the USC teams. It's like there's a Miami team right there, and then if Ohio State doesn't pull off a miracle
and get a gift call to keep overtime going,
yeah. And like, what was it, the strip too? You know, so all these little things. And then the team wins.
And the gay knee out like halfway through the game.
Yeah.
Like, think about how many things had to go wrong for Miami, Ohio State to have a chance to win that game, you know?
So, but, you know, those two games, that's going to be fun to revisit, too. Just, like, it feels like those two games kind of ended an era for both, you know, looking forward. Like, with the Nebraska losing to Miami, then Miami loses to Ohio State, and they never come back.
And Frank Solich, you know, by 2003... It was over for him.
He's out, and he got who's the coach? Bill Callahan.
Bill Callahan, the man who makes Nebraska fans still spit if you say his name around.
We're gonna run a West Coast.
We're gonna run the West Coast offense with an 800-page playbook at Nebraska.
And it didn't work. It's wild. It's like It's like when Dan Reeves tried to run the West Coast with Michael. It's like, why? What are you doing?
They went 10-3 in Frank Solich's last year, and then they didn't. It took them like 5 years to win 10 games.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. Oh, wow. That clearly our most exciting episode. That's quite beyond.
Right this there. Is what happens when I end up picking some like horse shit that only I care about.
Well, Dan, and that moves us on to next week. Some horse shit that only I could. It's weirdly defending Mark Richt years after the fact. We want to do. You want to do the
because
Mark Richt
you're such a Georgia troll. You're such a Georgia troll that like. Now that Mark Richt's gone, you have to elevate to gods because he's no longer there.
I feel like, though, as we kind of look back at this one, this will kind of be our defense of Mark Richt, you know? And even, like, if you're a Miami fan and not kind of happy how the year... Well, trust the guy. Because what this guy does, it feels like he builds programs back up. Or into something, really. So I think that's what we'll be talking about. And I'm talking about, Dan, the 2012...
The Georgia-Alabama game?
Yep, Georgia-Alabama, the SEC championship from 2012. Probably the game that changed the course of college football history, or at least in the SEC, at least UGA football history.
Yeah, right if Georgia wins that national championship, Mark Richt's there for the rest of his life. That's for sure.
So I think that's what we'll be doing. You can easily find that on YouTube. Just Google SEC championship 2012.
You get to listen to Uncle Vern and Uncle Gary.
So great. I was watching a little bit of this, and you get to watch just Alabama's, like, run game back, like, with Eddie Lacy, and it was just a thing of, especially in 2012, it was like a thing of beauty, what they were doing.
Yeah, I kind of prefer now, like, looking back and watching, like, what Alabama used to be before Alabama started trying to be like everybody else.
Yeah.
And they were just like, yeah, we're just going to line up under in a one-back set, and just, like, plow straight ahead, run inside zone, like, 40 times a game.
Yeah, I'm still curious as to what, I think it was, excuse me, okay. It was like losing to Ohio State. Really scared him, I have to assume.
Yeah, I think that was a big turning point. And then Clemson, you know.
Mm-hmm. And Auburn, you know, and then you lose, you know, the regular season to Auburn somewhere.
I mean,
I
think definitely Texas, because they looked at Texas A&M and went, this team isn't even well coached. Like... Like, they're not even good.
So, but I think it's going to be a fun one to look at.
And Ole Miss. I mean, honestly, like, nobody calls Hugh Freeze some, like, mastermind. But he beat Nick Saban two years in a row.
He's also masterminding, like, figuring out how to touch little girls.
Them in their rooms. Everybody's got their talents.
Yeah, that's Hugh Freeze's greatest, is measuring girls' collarbone to cleavage ratio of the dollar bill. That's right. We had the name right. That's what he did. Normal guy stuff.
Normal Jesus.
What a normal adjusted human being would want to do. And you might say, well, Zachary, shouldn't these girls dress appropriate at school? Sure. And you know who should check that out? A woman. It's not that. I don't think that's that crazy of a concept that men should probably not be ogling 16-year-old girls in determining if their cleavage.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel like a job for us. Maybe that's just me. Yeah. Sorry, Hugh Freeze. Not the biggest fan.
Hey, that's just because you've been poisoned by feminist ideology.
Not anymore, damn. Also,
it's true.
Feels great. Come join me. You just email people and you look at Deadspin a lot. That's what your life becomes. So, but anyway,
hey,
I think we'll...
You know, Deadspin is like the last Gawker art page to do any good.
It really is.
We got offline talk conversation we got to have about the route because, oh my God.
I'm not even sure what that means. Okay. So I'm also sure I don't know about this. So before we get out of here, Dan, anything else?
Yeah, I just hope people enjoyed watching a one-sided beatdown. I mean, it got me a wreck, so hopefully.
Well, Dan, also, we're kind of laying some seeds for future shows. So, like, that's also kind of the point. Here's Eric Crouch. Here's his dominating the team. Maybe later on we'll see him get dominated. But sure. A team that I think you and me will probably end up calling the greatest college football team of all time. But that'll be for another week. So next week, SEC Championship 2012, UGA versus Alabama, Mark Richt's last dying hope. Oh, real quick, didn't watch a second of the Royal Wedding either, so fuck that.
Of course I didn't. I'm not owned by some fucking half-fucking weirdo incest.
Ridiculous.
Nazi.
Dan, I did watch it, and I just yelled at the screen the whole on mute.
Literally, the royal family were Nazis. Like, look it up. Like, yeah. Heinrich Himmler flew to England to try to make a separate peace with members of the English royal family because they were all Nazi sympathizers.
Yeah. So you think they're woke? I don't think so. You know what the real woke thing is, Dan? Being against them. So.
That is strangely woke these days.
Yes, it is. The wokest, it's the wokest take you. The wokest thing you can do as a white person is actually. So.
It's extremely woke to just, like, treat, like, what was that thing Felix Mann said where it's like miscegenation is now, like, cultural appropriation?
Oh, wonderful. So, well, that's it for me on that note.
And on that note, for me, it's time to say goodbye and turn it over to our wonderful, you know, we need to remind people this time. I use it as a catchphrase. You know, Jason Owenson does music. You could hire him. He's got a kid. Look him up at Twitter, @OANSUN.
All right.
Give him some money.
Or join his band. So always looking for people who can play music with them. So maybe make a friend.
I don't know about that. This is the internet. And on that note, let's play the music.